Good afternoon, friends. My name is Tracy, and I'm most definitely an alcoholic. And a very grateful one. I had my last drink on the 6th of October, 2019. My home group is Pied Piper in Johannesburg, and my sponsor is Renette 8. And I was going to say Crazy Renette, if anyone knows her, because I know she's not here. Well, I hope she's not here. As I said, I'm extremely grateful to be of service anytime, whether it's washing dishes or being in a position to be able to share for these three beautiful humans that I've had the honor of getting to know. And I wanted to say, actually, of all the meetings I've been to around the country, this is the very first meeting I've ever been to in Tshwane, and I thought, these guys can put a meeting together. This is pretty amazing. So I think thanks to everybody who's been involved. I've also been blessed to be a part of planning for convention, and there's a hell of a lot of work that goes into it. So I think a round of applause to you guys for putting it together. Just quickly before I go into the preamble, I was here for the previous meeting, and I wanted to extend a huge welcome to the newcomers, first of all. But there was a bit of a concern that I felt like I needed to clear up after the previous meeting, if the newcomers were here to listen to Craig W. share. And Craig was talking about the gifts of recovery and the promises that he got in recovery, and then he went on to say, I actually got sex a few weeks ago. I didn't even work for it. It just happened. And I thought, these poor newcomers. So I just wanted to clarify that we do have the promises in AA, page 83 and 84 of the big book. And nowhere does it say that you will get sex without having to work for it. It won't just happen. I don't know where Craig is. So a huge welcome to newcomers. It really is the most beautiful journey. So if you stay, it's an absolutely sure thing that it will be the most beautiful journey of your life. And now for the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strengths, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. When I mentioned the promises just now, they're actually in a chapter called Into Action, and in all jokes aside, it is a program of action, and the action comes, as we know, for those of us who've been in the fellowship for a little bit, that the action comes in the 12 steps. The 12 steps, as laid out in the big book, we actually did a sponsorship workshop a few weeks ago, and there were so many questions about, do we have to do it in the right order? Do we have to do all 12 steps? And do they have to be in that order? And we were like, yeah, definitely. But that's found, obviously, in the doctor's opinion and the first 164 pages of the big book. And that's why it's an extra special honor for me to introduce our three speakers for this afternoon. First of all, Frank V, who does the Rosebank Big Book meeting every Saturday, for those who know Frank. Then Ray G, and I've been to some of Ray's meetings in Knysna, and he's very involved in the George Forum. Thank you, Ray. And then Sylvain, he steps in at the Rosebank Big Book when Frank is sometimes otherwise engaged. So thank you to all three of our speakers. And I'm going to hand over to Frank Lee.
Hi, my name is Frank. I am an alcoholic and I belong to the Rosebank Group in Johannesburg. I'm delighted to be here and to share on the topic Big Book Based Recovery. I'd like to thank Frank G for inviting me to share and all of you for being here. Thank you. When Frank first asked me to share on the topic, he said that he believed there was too much rehab jargon being shared at meetings these days and that the message of recovery was becoming garbled and diluted. Now, the reason why the big book was written in the first place, and we have to understand that the Alcoholics Anonymous started to carry the message to another alcoholic, and that's the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. When members were going about their business in America, some, when carrying the message in different cities, both realized that the message was becoming garbled. So they called a meeting in Akron with Dr. Bob to see what they could best do to carry the message of recovery in a unified way. They came to the conclusion, among other things, to write a book setting forth the problem as they had experienced it, and that the proposed book should be a useful solution for anyone with a drinking problem. And in the foreword to the first edition, they wrote, "To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." Now, I understand what Frank is talking about when he says the message is becoming garbled and too much rehab jargon is being shared at meetings today, because there's so much said at meetings that just cannot be reconciled with what is in the big book. And then there are so many in our fellowship who actually have the belief that sobriety, not drinking, is recovery, and all you have to do is to go to meetings. There are those too who have the belief that the steps are suggestions only, and you don't really have to take them. Guys, when did going to meetings become the AA program? We recover by the steps we take and not by the meetings we make. Now, of course, we've got to have meetings. We've got to have them for the laughter, for the joyousness, the democracy we fought in the last meeting, for the identification. We alcoholics are not a glum lot. But did you know that meetings are only mentioned twice in the big book? There's a whole chapter on working with others. And there's a chapter, Vision for You, which tells you how to work with others. And in the chapter, Vision for You, it said, "Be you one man alone with this book in your hand. We believe and hope it got all that you need to begin." Now, if I look at it, you know, we actually, like I said, we've got to understand these things. Another thing that we have to also understand is that sobriety is freedom from alcohol. And yes, you can get that while going to meetings and not drinking. Recovery can only come about as a result with a relationship with God. And this we have to do by taking the steps as in the big book. We alcoholics are selfish, self-centered people. You know, he says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. And he goes on and says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It's Easter time, and Easter is a Christian religion. And the Holy Trinity in the Christian religion is I, self, me, amen. And it basically says God is all-encompassing. The alcoholic Trinity, sorry, the Christian says the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, amen. The alcoholic Trinity is I, self, me, fuck you. And we've got to change from living the I, self, me, fuck you, to living a God-directed life. And in that chapter, we agnostics, and I'm not here to tell you guys how to do your program, that's your personal journey. And he said, in the personal stories, you'll find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power greater than himself. Whether believing a particular approach seems to make no difference, but he goes on and says, on one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Everyone has come to believe in a higher power that is greater than himself, and this power has accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. And then he tells us actually what happened. And he said, there are thousands of men and women. Today we can say there are millions of men and women. And he says, worldly indeed. And he said they flatly declare that since they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves, that is step two, to take a certain attitude towards that power, that's step three, to make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God, and to do certain simple things, step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. They've had a personality change. He said, in the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of the human resources, in the face of our alcoholism, they found a new power, peace, and sense of direction, flow into them. And he said this happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, guys, you've got to do this program with your heart, and you can't go to meetings. This does not work by osmosis. You actually have to take the steps, and you have to do it wholeheartedly. And in the Bible, in Jeremiah 29, verse 13, God says, "And ye will seek me, and when ye seek me with all your heart, you will find me." Now, man's brain is a wonderful organ. It works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, from the time man is born, right up until the time he has his first erection. And then he starts to think differently. Women's brains, I've never been able to understand them. That's why I've been married 5 times. But I love women dearly. So what I want to do now, you know, have you ever asked yourself, what is the meaning of life? I remember asking myself that so many times. It is my experience, if you do this program, with all your heart, you'll come to find meaning in your life. Now, my sobriety date is the 18th of May, 1989, but I did come into the fellowship about 6 years earlier. My mother-in-law at the time, and I've had a couple of mother-in-laws, was a friend of the late Bill Manning, who was a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Johannesburg at the time, asked if I'd go and see Bill about my drinking. I was shocked. I thought my problem was my mother-in-law interfered in my marriage. And her daughter, my wife, who overreacted. And she did used to overreact. She used to put anti-booze tablets in my tea. I mean, she could have killed me. I used to put sleeping tablets in her coffee. And we used to call it marriage. Anyway, I agreed to see Bill one Saturday morning, and he 12-stepped me, and he said he'd take me to the meeting the following Monday. I don't think there were meetings in Johannesburg over weekends in those years. I only went to the one meeting when my mother-in-law asked me what Bill had actually said. I said to her, you know, he said I must carry on drinking till Monday, and then they'll find out and see if I'm an alcoholic. I only went to the one meeting, and I actually asked Bill to drop me off at the Hyde Park Hotel on the way back. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to be one of you. Now, I want to tell you what happened in the 6 years from that time till I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous again in 1989. I got caught for drunken driving twice. On both occasions, going to the party, not coming back. My second wife, the one who overreacted, divorced me, and I married the local Los Lofty of the Hyde Park Hotel. She divorced me too. I was fired by the government where I was working in the Department of Home Affairs, getting people IDs and passports. I had overheard about 15 years since seeing 6 psychiatrists because I suffered terribly from anxiety and depression. And one of the psychiatrists in earlier years had actually sent me to a hospital where they dealt with psychiatric problems, Tara Hospital. And I just, Tracy asked me to tell you the story. And at Tara Hospital, I met the love of my life. I was 22 years old. Her name was Ruth, but she couldn't say Ruth, so she called herself Ruth. And Ruth and I used to love it up on the cricket field at the Tara Hospital. And then her father found out about our shenanigans, and he came and fetched her, and he picked her up, and he put her on his shoulder, and she was kicking and screaming, and the tears were just rolling down my cheeks, and the love of my life was taken away. I was also sent to Wedge Gardens by a magistrate under Section 33, and the last 28 days of my drinking, I slept in what was known as the broom cupboard of the Hyde Park Hotel. And finally, I ended up in a coma in the J.G. Stratham Hospital. Now, the J.G. Stratham Hospital in those days was a training hospital, and when I came out of the coma, all the nurses and the doctors would come around and they'd all have the say, and the one nurse said in Afrikaans, yeah, he would bit. So I bit it. I said the only prayer I knew, please God help, and I felt in a deep sleep, and when I awoke, my depression had lifted and the desire to drink had been taken away. I believe at that moment I was touched by the grace of God. After I left hospital, I was to meet you for the second time. It was about 3 weeks later. And Arthur, the man who became my sponsor, and who introduced me to the program of recovery as contained in the big book. The reason I asked Arthur to be my sponsor, because Arthur was about sober for about 6 weeks. The owner of the Hyde Park Hotel called for me, and I went to see him, and he offered me a job as the manager of the Hyde Park Hotel. And I honestly didn't know if I could take it or not while I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said I would go and ask the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I asked people who I really admired and respected, and every one of them said, if you go to a barber shop often enough, you're going to get a haircut. And Arthur, who spent a long time of his life in Sonavata prison, we had actually read the big book, said, read page 100. And on page 100 it said, assuming you are spiritually well, you can do all types of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. And it gave a whole lot of lists. And then it said, provided you have a reason to be there. And thank God I took the job, because what would I have had? When you've had 36 jobs and you've been fired by the government, it's not easy to get a job. And I made it a point of view to actually find out what was in the big book. And today, I believe, and I actually heard Andy speak about it, that this book was written twice. Once by the first 100, and once by God. And the God bits you only get to see when you're ready to see them. And what I've recently seen, that we have been chosen to work for God. And page 63, just where we, before we do the third step prayer, the wording is very clearly. He said, when we sincerely took such a position, that's to work for God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, capital letters, God. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now, if you want to work for God or not, that's your business. But I've made it my business to actually work for God. But I also believe that before I could work for God, I needed to be real. I needed to become who God intended me to be. And in step four, I found out what was blocking me off from God, because what was blocking me off from you, because God's in each and every one of us. And after I did that, I could get real in step five and own up and become who God intended me to be in the first place. And then, in step six, I was entirely ready to have God remove those defects of character. And in step seven, I actually said, God, you know what, I'm ready to work for you now. But God said, hang on, China. He said, what you've got to do is go and clear away the wreckage of your past, which we do in step eight and nine. And then you have the ninth step promises. There are actually 70 promises in the big book. And you've been rocketed into the fourth dimension, which he clearly states is freedom under the grace of God. And today I have freedom under the grace of God. And in step 10 is where we practice these principles in all our affairs. The 12 steps are sets of principles which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become usefully and happily whole. It's a job requirement to work for God, to do the program as you go through your day. And in step 11 is sought through prayer and meditation, get our thoughts and our actions in line with God's will for us. And then at night time to see if we've been living a God-directed life. And that brings us to the 12th step, the forgotten step of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because how many of us are going out and carrying the message to the still suffering alcoholic? And the sad thing is, we've got rehabs today who are doing the work for us. And we have a captive audience. And a lot of them have learnt a whole lot of stuff that cannot be reconciled with what's in the big book. You know, the 12th step promises actually state, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. And I'll tell you some of the remarkable things that happened to me. From sleeping in the broom cupboard, in early sobriety, becoming the manager of the Hyde Park Hotel, and now sleeping in the pink suite. From having seen six psychiatrists and being a complete head case, today in the times of COVID, to having been given a certificate as essential mental health care worker. From head case to essential mental health care worker. From being sent to Wedge Gardens by magistrate under section 33 to today being the house for the Wedge, a position I still hold and have done for the last 9 years. I'm nearly 77 years old, and they recently asked me to sign a contract to stay another 5 years. From having being fired by the government to actually becoming the chairman of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous, and at a time when I was able to chair the World Service Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now guys, if these are not amazing promises, then I don't know what is. And more than anything, I've got meaning in my life today. Meaning to carry the message to this whole suffering alcoholic. I go all over South Africa and I do big book weekends and I love it and I meet so many people and I meet so many of you, and it's what it's all about. And I carry the message of recovery to the best of my ability. You know, I want to end this talk about telling you a story about the days of old. The days of kings and queens. It was sent to me by a girlfriend I had at the time. It's an Indian lady. I just got to tell you this. When I got into a relationship with her, she's a lovely lady. She now lives in Cape Town, a school teacher. One of the guys from the south sent me a message and they said, "We see Frankie goes to Bollywood." So Frankie went to Bollywood. And the message is about the days of old when there were kings and queens and castles and kingdoms. And on a certain day, the king got all of his subjects together and he told them that he was building a road to his castle and that whoever travelled the road the best would receive a bag of gold. On the day, which was declared a public holiday, everybody came to win the bag of gold. Some came on horseback. Others came in their running gear. They think you get there first, you'll get the bag of gold. Some came in their best clothing. Others came with picnic baskets. And when they got to the king, he was waiting at the gates and he asked each of them what they had thought of the road. And everybody said, "Your Majesty, it's a wonderful road. Apart from a large clump of rocks that are in the middle of the road, near the end, which forced us to go a long way around to get back onto the road." And finally, a man came and had a bag of gold in his hand. And he said to the king, "Your Majesty, I found this gold in a clump of rocks that were in the middle of the road and which I was moving to the side to make the journey easier for those yet to come." And the king replied, "My man, the gold is yours, because the person who travels the road is he or she who makes the journey easier for those years to come." And that, my friends, is exactly what Big Book Based Recovery is. Making the journey easier for those years to come. This whole program is about finding God, about finding a power greater than ourselves. I always knew there was a God, I just didn't know that God came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And best of all, God is here today. And even better, God is sitting in your chair. May God bless and keep you always. Thank you.
Good afternoon, friends. My name is Ray and I'm an alcoholic. How the heck do I follow that? Well, we'll try our best. Last year, I invited Frank to come to George to talk about Big Book-based sponsorship. And Frank got that slightly snarky tone, which he can occasionally use, and said to me, "Is there any other type of sponsorship?" And I had to break the bad news to him that actually there was a lot of ways of sponsorship. And at one stage I thought there were as many ways of sponsoring as there were sponsors in AA. But fortunately there was only one way that worked for me. And that's what I'd like to share with you today. My story started when I was 10 years old. I had my first drink at 10 years old. And I continued to drink in fits and starts. I was a binge drinker. In fits and starts, whenever I could get access to alcohol, I'd flatten it. And I continued that way for 50 years. I finally sobered up in Amsterdam in the Netherlands in January 2013. Yes, you heard right, Amsterdam. Who the hell sobers up in Amsterdam? The rest of the world goes to Amsterdam to get wasted or at work. I went there to sober up, so I'm very peculiar. I truly believe today that my life changed. On the 26th of January 2013. I was over 60 years old, and frankly, life only really started at that stage, and I'm just so grateful for the man that picked up that telephone call from me and persuaded me to go to first meeting. I believe that that's when I started to get lucky. The first bit of luck was the weather was bloody terrible that January in Europe. We're talking about daytime temperatures of minus 25, so it was pretty damn cold. The rehab that my health insurer wanted to send me to detox was in the Scottish Highlands, and all the plumbing was frozen solid. So the building was condemned, they weren't allowing any patients into the building. So all I had to fall back on was AA, and I'm so grateful. And I thank God daily for the fact that the only thing I could fall back on was AA. I got lucky again when the first AA meeting that I ever attended was a beginner's meeting. There were 12 sober, happy, healthy alcoholics there that had only one mission in life, and that was to help basket cases like me that were new to the program to get sober. So I was incredibly blessed by that. I got even more lucky when I heard and accepted the truth about myself at that meeting, that my life was unmanageable and I could not cope with booze. I would never be able to cope with booze. I was an alcoholic, and I truly accepted that at that first meeting. I believe that that acceptance was probably the engine that powered the next bit of luck that hit me, because by some extraordinary, I can only say coincidence, or by some extraordinary piece of luck, for some reason the desire to drink was removed from me at that meeting. I've now been sober for more than 10 years, and thanks to the grace of God, I've not even thought about a drink since that day. Now that could only have been divine intervention, considering the way that I've been drinking. I got even more lucky when, after a couple of weeks, a guy called Vic invited me to go and have coffee with him. And at that coffee meeting, he told me the bad news. He said, "Ray, I've got to tell you the bad news. You are going to drink again, unless you have a spiritual experience. Now, if you want to have a spiritual experience, I can show you how. But you've got to be willing, and you've got to be prepared to put in your effort." And I was so desperate, I said, "Dick, I'll do anything you tell me to do." Now, why I say I was lucky was Dick was one of those people that truly believed in his heart, and this is how he served up, how he sponsored served up, and his sponsor served up. He said, "Via the old way." I didn't know about the new or old way, but the old way was the way that had had a 75% success rate in the early days of AA. And that was to do exactly and precisely what was in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we would meet every Saturday morning in his flat in Amsterdam, and we would read the big book to each other. And when the book told me to become willing, I became willing. And when the book told me to pray, I prayed. When the book told me to make a list, I made a list. When the book told me to make amends, I made amends. But when the book told me to work with others, I said no. I told Vic he was bloody crazy. He'd been 3 years sober before he started working with others. Here I was, not even 11 months sober, and now I've got to go out and work with others. And Dick laughed, and he said to me, "Ray, let's leave it up to your higher power." And I thought, well, this is an easy cop-out. That was on a Thursday evening. Dick and I, at this stage, I was back in South Africa, living permanently in South Africa, my home in Leisner, and we used to meet via Skype. He's still in Amsterdam. And I went to a meeting in Sedgefield, neighboring Sedgefield. They invited me to speak. And I spoke, and at the end of the meeting this guy came up to me and he said, "My name is Andrew and I've just been released from rehab today and I need a sponsor." And I said, "Go and talk to the other Oaks. They'll give you a telephone number." And then I looked up and I looked in his eyes and I saw all the pain and the hurt and the shame that had been in my eyes just 11 months earlier, and I knew that I'd been presented my sponsor call-up papers. So there was no option thereafter. I just had to fit in and just follow what the program tells us. I believe that that truly was, I hit the jackpot that time, because whatever I know about the program, whatever the program has taught me, I've learnt via my sponsees. They think they learn from me together. I learn everything from them. I'm just so honoured to have had several sponsees over the years. I've got sponsees, I've got grand sponsees these days. I think one of them might actually be in the audience today. And I've just been richly blessed by those people, because they've kept me sober, they've kept me grateful and humble, and they've kept me growing in my sobriety. Now my friend Nicholas in Leisner, says that when we say we are lucky, what we are actually saying is that God got up to some mischief in your life. And then he gets a twinkle in his eye and he says, good mischief. Now Nicholas should know, because Nicholas walks around on his phone, he's got this photo that was taken of him lying outside a shebeen in Nekis Township in Neisner. And Nekis is pretty grim. And there he was lying outside this shebeen. And his face was bloated, battered and bruised. He looked as though he was about 50 years old in the photo. Actually, he was 19. He'd run away from his home, his family, in the rural parts of Eastern Cape. He thought he'd find a better life in Neisner. An extraordinary way he did. But first of all, he had to literally hit rock bottom outside that shebeen. And he'd been left there to die by whoever the people were that attacked him the night before. He can't remember anything about that. Well, God got up to some good mischief in Nicholas's life that night, because he not only didn't die, but he was taken to hospital, he got patched up. He found a spiritual path. And when he turned 25, he got ordained a Baptist minister. And he went back to Nekis in Neisner, and he opened up a church in that very same shebeen. It was this little thin shack, and it's now a Baptist church. And Nicholas continues to get up to good mischief, not for his community, but also for me, because he's become my spiritual advisor. Quite extraordinary man, and I'm so lucky that he's been part of my life. I was recently cross-stepping a young man, and in a conversation he said to me, if I could only get happy, I could stay sober. And I had to tell him the bad news. I said to him that 10 years in AA had taught me that he got it, and I used to think the same thing. It's got it the wrong way around. If we get sober, then and only then do we alcoholics stand a chance of finding happiness. In early sobriety, I had an old timer telling me, AA never promises you happiness. Well, he must have a different big book from mine, because my big book tells me in the first of the step 9 promises, we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. And on page 164, Bill tells us that we will probably meet many of us trudging the road of happy destiny. But the quote I like most about happiness comes from the long form of the Serenity Prayer. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. AA doesn't promise us sunshine, lollipops and prancing unicorns. Life is hard. Merely being sober doesn't change that. But I believe happiness is a choice. We are as happy as we choose to be. However, for us alcoholics, we've got some basic things to do before we stand a chance of being happy. And those three things, I think that these are prerequisites for a happy life. And this applies not only to us alcoholics, but it applies to all the others out there. You know, those unfortunate, underprivileged people that aren't part of a 12-step program. I believe the three things you need for a happy life is, number one, you need to be at peace with your past. Number two, you need to be comfortable in your own skin and living in the present. And I believe you need a vision for yourself and your future, which is in line with God's plan for you. I believe the program, as spelled out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, gives you everything that you need to fulfill those three criteria. To be at peace with your past, you need to stop fighting that past. You need to find closure for past hurts. You need to forgive others. You need to make amends to those you have harmed. To become comfortable in your own skins and living in the present, you need to be at peace with who and what you are. You need to forgive ourselves. We need to stop trying to please everyone. We need to learn to live in the now. And we also need to make time for our spiritual development. The third prerequisite always reminds me of a story. So if you've heard it before, please forgive me. And I think I've been buzzed. An alcoholic is praying. God, he says, I'm disappointed in you. And God answers, why is that, my son? Well, God, there was this jackpot this week for 30 million rand, and you gave it to some dude in Springs. Man, 30 million rand would have sorted out all my problem, and God resent it elsewhere. And God says, well, I'm sorry, my son, I'm sorry that you're disappointed. But don't you think you should be doing just a little bit more to help yourself? And the alcoholic whinges. He says, what do you mean, God? What do you mean? What more are you expecting from me? And God replies, well, my son, you could start by buying yourself a bloody lotto ticket. 10 years ago, Ray, alcoholic, expected everything and did the bare minimum. Today, I have come to understand that to create a future for ourselves, we need to eliminate fear of the future. We need to set modest goals. If you lack an education, go out and get one. And that we need to understand that being of service is the reason we are on this planet. And we need to rewrite our story, the story of our lives, in a way that is in line with God's plan. And we need to never forget that we are the builders and God is the architect. If I have a look back on the past 10 years, I can tell you now the times that it went well is when I got those two in the right sequence. God was the architect, I was the builder. When I decide I'm going to take over the drawing table and I'm now going to draw up the plans and I'm going to hire God as a day laborer, it doesn't work out that well. So coming to a conclusion now, why do we say we are not a glum lot? Well, I believe it is because we've become lucky. We became lucky because we found our way to the doors of AA. And we found a program in AA that teaches us how to cope with all of life's challenges. And I believe that happiness is now a choice for us. So my prayer for each of you here today is that may the God of your understanding get up to some good mischief in your life today. I'd like to thank Wim Yuan and the organizing committee for this wonderful occasion, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to be of service.
Good afternoon, friends. My name is Sylvan. And I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. Frank, thanks for asking me to share. Anna Marie, thanks for all you've done. And look who's here. How are you?